Yo guys, what is good? Welcome to FL Teams here. My name is Dylan Spaulding. Joined with us today, Mr. Von Sikora, as always. And we're doing this on Thanksgiving, funny enough. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hopefully everybody had a great holiday. At this time we are recording, it is about 9 o'clock at night. So most everybody's probably got their food in, digested in them. Digest into this podcast, because this is going to be a crazy podcast tonight. Final game of the season. We have done it, Vaughn. We've made it here. We've done all the conference games when you first joined in. It's been a fun run, man. I have to say, it's been awesome getting to do this with you. I've really enjoyed getting to cover these games and talk about these games leading up to them. But this is it. It's a penultimate, if you will, or I should say the ultimate finale for the USF Bulls here heading into Saturday night. And we got the war on I-4. So, people are traveling on this war on I-4, but the Flames are gonna be they're gonna be on Saturday night. The Flames are gonna be on war on the I-4 road or whatever it's called. The Flames are gonna be there, because it's gonna be a heated battle between these two schools in what is right now the final time these two teams will be playing against each other. I cannot wait, man. This is gonna be, I mean, you want to talk about how heated, there's gonna, I feel like there will be a lot of pushing and shoving. This is gonna be a fun battle. I cannot wait for Saturday night. It is gonna be a fun night.
Can't wait, man. I mean, definitely the most important game that we've played so far this year. I mean, other than some of the games in the beginning of the year, but I mean, USF, like Coach DiPrato said this week, playing for two trophies this week, the Warren I-4 trophy and the chance to stop them from moving on to the championship game. So I know USF's going to be ready to play these seniors. Super cool. I don't know if you saw it on the uniform, actually on the top of the helmet, all the seniors are having their signature on the helmet. So last time these guys are going to get to ball out together, obviously a very, very tight-knit group, and they've been through a lot of adversity this year, and they get to show one more time what they can do and hopefully play the upset on Saturday night. And super exciting, and the first time in a while it's been on a Saturday. And once again, like we've said before with Cincinnati and some of these other and Houston, some of these other good AAC teams that are moving on to a new conference, last time we'll see them for a while, so maybe that'll bring some extra energy to the team, some extra juice, even more than the Warren I-4 would regularly bring.
Yeah, and it's interesting in a fact too that like USF has played much better against these like tougher teams. Like they've actually kept things a lot closer in like some of these games where they've been like very much heavily underdogs in these games. It's been very interesting to see this team and how they've performed against, teams really that they should be able to take care of business with. And they actually, I'll be honest, they probably put together the most complete game I saw on last Friday. And I mean, you talk about a thriller game. I was up till 1 o'clock. Unfortunately, the media room, the Wi-Fi was getting messed up. Couldn't get into the post-game press conference. I would have loved to have talked to Byron Brown and Danny DiPrato. I mean, I give credit, man. There were some ballsy calls here on Friday, but we'll get into that in a second. But Vaughn, you mentioned with the helmets, the obviously you mentioned the kind of stripe going along the middle of the helmet. It's going to be all the autographs of all the seniors, as you mentioned, which is awesome. I love that. The helmets are beautiful. I love the helmets, actually. They're really, really nice. They look really good with the entire uniform come together. I believe last time they wore this jersey, which was in 2020, I saw it in person. It's a nice actually looking jersey when you see it in person. But they paired it up with the chrome helmet, and it looked a little weird. I like this like green helmet look. I think this is actually a pretty solid look now with the entire kind of slime look. I'm excited to see them break these out again here once again for the second time in program history, because they've only been wearing the slime jerseys for 3 years. The basketball team did it for a while, then football went into them, and now they've kind of got into them the last couple of years here.
Yeah, man, slime time. I'm excited. I mean, anytime you can
Yes,
get
sir.
a new uniform, it's awesome for not only just the confidence of the team, look good, play good, and so forth, but also the recruiting, man. Like, let's get as many cool looking jerseys as possible, especially for a team that's been struggling. Let's maybe take a little bit of the eyes off the field and into the uniforms a little bit. But super excited that they're wearing those, and hopefully the team will be hyped up to wear them as well.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to see them rock those slime green jerseys. It's gonna sound like look like Nickelodeon out there on Saturday night. Look like, oh man, it's gonna look good. It's gonna look like Double Dare, an episode of Double Dare where this is got
There we go.
slime. So I'm breaking down my 90s vibes here, if you will, tonight. But Let's get into this, man. Tulsa and USF last Friday night. Daniel DePrado's first road game and his only road game, we assume, as head coach with the USF Bulls. And, you know, obviously he could end up getting a job somewhere else. The way he's actually done, I would like to hire him as a head coach. He's done a pretty impressive job up to this point, kind of almost completely 180-ing this entire game plan that the USF Bulls have had the last 2 weeks. So I've been very excited to see what he's been able to do the last 2 weeks. We'll talk about that here with the Tulsa game. But, man, what a game that was, man. I mean, 1 o'clock at night, it was a late game. It was going long into the evening, at least here on the East Coast. I know that game was in Oklahoma, so it did end before it was Saturday night. So it was a Friday ending for them. But it was well into early Saturday morning when this game had ended. And I mean, man, it was an entertaining game from start to finish. And the Bulls put up the most points they scored all season, by the way, in this game against Tulsa. I believe they scored, what was it, 45 points, I believe, in this game against Tulsa, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, a pretty impressive performance for this Bulls team on Friday night. I mean, they really threw out all the stops at Tulsa. And I genuinely thought towards the end, I'm like, this team is going to have a great shot at winning. There was actually one point I thought, USF is going to beat Tulsa tonight. It's going to happen. And unfortunately, it didn't end up happening. Byron Brown obviously showing off that little bit of that rookie prowess, if you will, towards the end. Unfortunately, just not able to get the job done there. But give credit to the rookie quarterback. Give credit to the rookie head coach and Daniel DePrado. What a performance by Byron Brown. I guess we'll talk about that because that's probably the big headline heading in out of that game was Byron Brown. I mean, just talk about making a mark on your first night. It looked like he was playing high school football out there. He was Mr. North Carolina for a reason, and he's showing that out there on Friday night because he was back to doing his Friday night light thing there on Friday night against Tulsa. I mean, he had an incredible performance. He was, I believe, perfect. And there was a couple, obviously, breaks that he had, a couple pass interference penalties, and they kept talking about that, too, in the broadcast. They were like, oh, man, the streak lives, and that was the entire thing in the broadcast booth the entire night, especially late into that game. But let's talk about Byron Brown first, man. I mean, what a performance by the kid in his first start of as USF Bowl, and excited to see what he could do this weekend as well.
Yeah, man. What an exciting time. I mean, the crowning of Byron Brown, like, what a game, man. Just to start that streak off was something that the guys have struggled under center for so far this year is really completion percentage. Haven't really been able to complete a lot of passes, and that's something that's tough in the passing game. You want to be efficient as possible, especially when we're trying shorter stuff, and Marsh and Bohannon struggled a lot of time with that completion percentage. And Brown, I'm pretty sure, came out and completed how many in a row to start? Was it 20? Or
it was 21, I believe, if 20, I'm mistaken.
21. Yeah, so, yeah, 21, he ended up 21 of 25 for 240 and three touchdowns. And something that was so amazing to me is usually those rookie QBs come in and they're looking a little antsy in the pocket. You know, they don't want to get hit, not a lot of game time. But he just looked so comfortable, really hung in there a couple of times to deliver some strikes. You know, the defense was trying to pressure him. And that's something you want to do against a rookie QB is try to get for to him and scare him. But Brown was not scared at all, absolutely comfortable, and showed quickness as well on that rushing touchdown. And super exciting to, like we've been saying, like these last couple of games, you know, we're really looking towards the future, and it's really starting to look like with the way that he played Friday night that he could be a big part of that future. So super proud and super excited. And once again, with him opening up that passing game, then the offense is allowed to play a little cat and mouse. You know, this year so far, haven't exactly had that consistent passing game. And once now that we had it and the play caller can switch, hey, it's going to be a pass here and a run here and catch the defense off guard. And I think that was one of the reasons that USF got all the way up to 42 points on Friday night was Batie is catching them off guard when they think it's going to be a pass. And Brown has the ability to complete a ball downfield, and absolutely super exciting stuff from the offense. But once again, you know, the defense didn't really exactly put together a whole four quarters. You know, you can't really give up 24 points in a second quarter and expect to win. I mean, that's really just going to put you behind the eight ball. But as far as offense, you know, super fantastic and really exciting to see.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the money there. I mean, excuse me again, what an impressive performance by Byron Brown in his first start. I mean, as you mentioned, they really passed the ball a lot more than I've ever seen this team pass, it feels like, this season. Even with Marsh, it felt like they were a little conservative. They really opened up the passing game. A lot more longer throws. Even the guys in the broadcast were even mentioning, too, like, if you watch, you know, Byron Brown, and you were talking about this completion percentage, you know, kind of 21 for 21, where he was just straight perfect. You know, they were even mentioning, too, like, some of these throws aren't like little 2 yard passes to the side. Like he was throwing them, you know, darts down the middle. I mean, he was throwing good passes. Like the kid was making impressive throws down the middle of the field. Like he was being, you know, a good quarterback. He was being a, you know, a risk taker, if you will, for the Bulls team, which we haven't seen much of this season with our quarterbacks. It feels like we've kind of been conservative in the passing game. And I like seeing that because if you think about it, at this point in the year, there's really nothing to play for. And at this point, outside of this UCF game, these last two games that Daniel DePrado has coached, there was nothing to play for outside of just winning a game and possibly getting some pride, earning some pride and finishing off the year strong. I mean, to be able to open up that passing game, get their guys comfortable, and then next season, going into next season, they can open up the passing game again a bit more, and they know they have a guy who can pass the ball and really can add an extra layer on top of this offense because we know what the running attack can be. I think that definitely is going to help this team going forward. I'm really excited to see what Byron Brown is able to do here going forward. UCF fans, I saw even on Twitter, were talking about how good he was and how exciting this kid could be for this program. I'm really excited. I really hope we don't lose this kid. And if we could get Prime, we'll say for right now, if we could get him coming into this program, maybe that will actually keep him into this program because he's a special talent. We really should not lose him because he is going to be a guy who could definitely be the future of this program and could be a guy like Quentin Flowers who really rejuvenates this program and kind of brings it back to what it was back in, you know, 2014, 15, 16, when they were making it to constant bowl games during the Quentin Flowers era.
Yeah, man. Super exciting. I mean, that's the first best start that you can have is consistent play at the quarterback position, yeah, completing a lot of passes. And like you were saying, that was one of the most impressive things is he's really taken shots down the field. And another one of my biggest observations was a lot of the time when with Marsh and Bohannon, a lot of the passing looks were screens and play actions and things of that nature. And DePrado really showed the confidence in Brown and go ahead and drop straight back, read the field and find the space. And that's what he did over and over and over and found the space. And as well as Sean Atkins also had somewhat of a breakout performance with 9 catches, 115 yards, as well as a touchdown showed up as one of Brown's main targets. And he was spraying it all over the field. And a lot of guys were getting opportunities because Brown could push it not only down the field, but all over. And just super exciting to see. And once again, something that we can really look forward to in the future as a guy who could be the guy in a stud, a la Quentin Flowers, like we saw. Not exactly the same style of player, but still just as exciting for what he could do with his arm.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely, man. I'm really excited to see what Brown can do. And, you know, I mean, just I don't expect him to be like Quentin Flowers because, you know, obviously I'd rather be, you know, who he is as a quarterback. I don't want him to do things that are kind of out of the box from what he is as a quarterback. But like, if he could give the same success that Quentin Flowers gave this program, he's going to be something special. So really excited to see what he can do. Definitely. I wouldn't say he's a project quarterback. I mean, I know he's still early in his career. He's definitely a guy who can, you know, still improve as a quarterback. Obviously there were some mistakes that he made, but I mean, for the most part, he was as clean, I think, as you could get for a first start as possible. I mean, honestly, I don't think he did anything like glaring wrong. And again, this is all new for him. Everything was new for him heading into this week. He's never been, I mean, he's been on road games, I'd imagine, probably with the team, but he's never started a game. So, but you also wonder too, I mean, how much did being coming from the high school level just last year translate to this past week? I mean, getting ready for this game, you wonder how that translated because remember he had, you know, that Friday night experience playing in high school. And I know a lot of these guys do, but you know, for your first start being on a Friday night, I mean, that's gotta be pretty comfortable for you, especially, you know, playing in the high school level.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And he looked like his high school self out there. And once again, very clean, the best QB game we've seen all year for sure.
Yeah.
And just so unbelievable how comfortable he really looked and was just able to deliver strikes. But unfortunately on the defensive end, just couldn't get it done. Braylon Braxton just looked like an absolute stud, had over 300 yards in the air. And then once again, the front seven just continues to struggle. Another 200 yard rushing performance with Denarik Prince, and he averaged 8.5 yards per carry. So once again, another USF week, another time where pretty much you decide to run the ball against the Bulls and you're picking up a first down. So, and once again, that second quarter was just so tough. 24 points allowed. You just gets the offense so far behind where if you score 42 points, you really should be able to win a football game. But the consistency just hasn't been there. The tackling hasn't been there. And the coverage hasn't really been there in the air either. And let's not forget, you know, this Braxton guy was not starting the whole year. He was really the backup.
Yep.
And has been coming on in the last couple of weeks, but he was just too comfortable, and the Bulls weren't really able to get enough pressure, and couldn't execute in the running game either. So that's really, I think, what's going to be the key in this UCF game going forward, is this defense needs to show up, and it still hasn't happened this year up to this point.
That was the one thing I wanted to ask Daniel DePrato on Friday night, Saturday night, whatever you want to call it. Was how do you get this team ready, especially going into this UCF game? Because it doesn't get any easier. You got a running back in Isaiah Bowser, the newest, what is it called? The newest star in the Super Mario film. they did a video of that, if for anybody who hasn't seen it. I mean, you're gonna have to get ready for that. I mean, Isaiah Bowser's he's an animal. He's a good runner. He's a good running back for that UCF Knights team. So I would have loved to have seen, you know, how do you get this team to turn things around, especially with this being the last week? And, you know, although it's a rivalry game, you know, a lot of these guys are probably ready for the season to end. A lot of these guys, it's been a tough year for everybody in this program. I mean, a lot of these guys just really want to get away and not worry about having to play a game after this week. So you kind of wonder where the defensive mindset is going to be at heading into this weekend. Again, I believe they're going to be there. I hope that the Bulls are ready. They better be ready, because UCF, if they're not ready, the UCF's going to drive in the terminology for UCF, they're going to drive a sword right into Raymond James Stadium on Saturday night. So it might be a long night for the Bulls if they're not ready to go on Saturday. But I do believe they will be ready, and I believe Daniel DePrado will have them ready heading into Saturday night. A few more guys I wanted to touch base on from that Tulsa game. Brian Batty passed 1,000 yards rushing on the season. I mean, Batman, if you will, for us here in the Bulls. I mean, he's had what an unbelievable season he's had, man. I mean, you know, everybody talked about going into the year, oh, Jaron Mangum this, you know, he's going to get probably a lot of the load of the backs, but Brian Batty's going to definitely have a bigger workload. I don't think anybody thought he was going to have this big of a workload, and he has delivered every game. He's ran over 100 yards. I actually created a fantasy lineup on DraftKings for Saturday's slate of games, and I put Brian Batty in my lineup because I'm like, he's going to get 100 yards easily. So not a hard pick there for that. So congratulations, Brian Batty, on passing 1,000 yards on the year. Sean Atkins came out as a surprise receiver. Xavier Weaver, we knew, was going to be out for that game. Maybe he could have saw Jimmy Horn as a guy who would have gotten more passing yards. He, I believe, got only like 40 yards of pass catches, six receptions.
Six for 42, yeah.
Yeah, 6 for 42. Sean Atkins, though, man, coming out 9 for 115. And that was another thing I wanted to ask DePrado. Unfortunately, with the press conference not being able to work, I couldn't. But one thing I wanted to ask DePrado is, you know, with Brown coming from kind of the, you know, second, third string group of players, and Atkins being one of those, was it more of a better, comfortable connection? Because Atkins and Brown felt like they were connecting all game. I mean, they looked good on Friday night, and I felt like that probably did play a part of it. Is, you know, Brown has played with guys like Atkins and some of those lower tier guys, and he probably was more comfortable passing it to him than maybe, say, Jimmy Horn Jr., guys who he hasn't got to play with much because they're all the starters on this football team.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I'm sure him and Sean had a great connection during practice, and that really showed. And Sean, not the fastest guy, but a great possession receiver. And Brown was just able to fit it in the spot over and over and over and just put it on the money. And Atkins seemed to find himself open once again. And just to touch on Batib, yeah, man, what a stud he's been all year. He'd definitely be my vote for offensive MVP year. He's been amazing, and just – whenever this team needs a play, he seems to make it to the best of his ability. And even with an offensive line that's really struggled this year, to still rush for over 1,000 yards is definitely a huge accomplishment and something that should really be remembered. And once again, as we've been saying on the pod every single week, Batib, please stay. We could really use you again in the next couple of years. So, he's been absolutely amazing this year, and super proud of him for having that achievement. And what a guy. And especially coming from last year, you know, a guy who just seemed like more of a special teams, explosive type of guy, to really convert that into meaningful playing time on the offense is a great achievement. And what a year he's had, especially with such a struggling USF team all year. He's really been that bright spot and that stud to really come out of some of the rubble that has been this season.
Yeah, it's really been him and Dwayne Boyles, right? They've been kind of the two that we very much have picked a lot, especially in our picks in terms of like players to watch each week. But there's a reason why, because they are the best players on this football team right now. I mean, you know, granted, there have been other good guys who have stood out in certain weeks and such, and we can't, you know, not talk about them as well. But I mean, they've been the two most consistent players on this team who have produced consistently each and every week for this football team. I mean, Dwayne Boyles is literally honestly the anchor, if you will, to that defense. Without Dwayne Boyles, I don't know what this defense would be. This defense would probably be even worse than what it is right now, to be honest with you.
Hard
And
to
I
imagine.
don't want to say it, but it's true. I mean, I'm not trying to be like, you know, Debbie Downer, if you will, but I mean, like, it's how it is. I mean, without Dwayne Boyles, what would this defense look like? It probably wouldn't be the way it is right now. And even though it's not good, it'd probably be a lot worse without having a guy like that in terms of Dwayne Boyles and his leadership on that defense. So, yeah, very interesting game. Another guy I wanted to mention too, Andrew Stokes. I don't know if you got to see this, Vaughn, but freaking amazing kick, by the way, on that onside recovery. I popped so much for that. I was so freaking excited because finally we actually, again, as I mentioned, Daniel DePrado, he's very ballsy head coach. I give him credit, man. Like, doing something like that, especially in the third quarter and like trying to get back into that game, I give so much. Like, I love Daniel DePrado, man. Like, I have like a man crush on him right now because of all the good calls that he's finally making. I like what he's done so far, man. I if do you agree with me? I think Daniel DePrado in his short time is showing that he has the capabilities of being a head coach. I think he's got more work like to be done, obviously, because he hasn't had much time and this is a complete different situation, but he definitely is deserving enough to get a look at to be a possible head coach, whether it be at the FBS level, like a lower tier FBS team, or even like a, you know, a FCS team here heading into the next year or two.
Yeah, man. I mean, I definitely agree with you. He's definitely brought the juice and the energy, and as much of a culture change you can bring in the last three games of a season, you know, it's really tough when a team already has cemented all of Jeff Scott's ideals and everything with that. But he's brought the juice, man, and super exciting to see, you know, not only talks the talk, you know, in the pressers, but walks the walk out on the field, like that onside call and some of the offensive calls, you know, really trying to stretch the field and take risks, man. And why
Yeah.
not? You know, as we've been saying, you're not playing for anything. Take those shots down the field and showcase some of this talent that USF has. I mean, pretty sure they're still ranked in the top 75 of all FBS teams as far as just talent of players. So
Yep.
the guys are there and he's really starting to show off some of their talent and super excited for all the stuff he's done. Once again, said all the right things and really showed that, yeah, we should maybe take a look at this guy to be a head coach in the future. Obviously not as big as some of the other names, but what he's done, I mean, hasn't won a game yet, obviously, but some of the energy and once again, hate to say it again, but the juice that this man's bringing has been super exciting to see. And I think the players are really starting to rally around it as well.
I feel like personally, I mean, and I don't know how much he will be very much interested in doing this, but could we possibly see? I would love to keep DePrado here. Like, I would love to have him stay. And whether he goes back to his special teams gig or not is not up to me, obviously. But if it was me, I don't think he's a defensive-minded coach. I don't think we've seen that. Could you see DePrado becoming like in a like co-offensive coordinator with Trickett, maybe? I know they brought in Trickett to be kind of his own person, but you have to find a way to use Daniel DePrado in a more like bigger role because we know he could. I mean, he looks like he could be a fun coach to at least have in a bigger capacity, like in terms of running things. I think if you could bring Trickett and him together as co-OCs, maybe Trickett can kind of bring DePrado under his wing and teach stuff because obviously we got to remember too, you know, Trickett is the OC, and I imagine a lot of what the offensive plays have been called here in the last couple of weeks probably have been helped by Trickett with DePrado. So is that something that could possibly be happening for next season? Like, could you see that as something that's on the table? Because I would like to keep DePrado, but I feel like he should deserve a bigger role than just being a special teams coordinator, especially with his kind of, you know, creative mind in terms of some of the plays he can draw up.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's definitely more of an offensive guy, as you're saying, played QB at ULM in college. So definitely more of an offensive guy. And that co co-coordinator thing is always super tough. And I know a lot of USF fans are big Travis Trickett guys. I'm not as big on him as some of the other people. I think he's been very solid this year, but like you were saying, it'd be tough for, you know, bringing DePrato up as an interim head coach and then saying, well, just go back to your special teams spot would be a little tough, especially as a career move for him. So I would like to see him in a capacity where he could be a higher level offensive assistant or a co-head coach or whatever he's doing. But once again, he's saying all the right things, and I would love to have him back in some capacity if he's interested. The co-offensive coordinator thing is a little tough just because only one guy can really call the plays, and there really is a lot of headbutting and a lot of decision making that goes into that, and it's kind of tough to split that in between two people. But I do agree with you in the fact that let's bring this guy back, man. I mean, I think the players really cling to him, and he's really showing some of that energy and some of the turnaround that this program really needs, even yeah. as a team, you know, that's got to be down in the dumps, man. I mean, 1-10 is a really tough place to be, rock bottom pretty much. And he's still, like we've been saying all the right things and bringing the energy every single day. And I think the players really appreciate that, because sometimes when you get down to the end of some of these tough seasons and the coach is kind of down, you know, the players are kind of down, but it seems like the players have reacted well and really once again clung to that energy that he's brought. So I would love to see him brought back if possible.
I think that was kind of becoming prevalent with Jeff Scott, was the energy was slowly getting lost, I think. And you could even tell in that Temple game, when I showed you that press conference, like you could tell, like just based off of him, that the energy was gone. Like there was this complete 180 from, you know, with the guy we saw at the beginning of the year and, you know, kind of exciting. You know, he was very happy about some of the performances that some of these guys had. Then it just got to a point where it was like, it just completely 180'd. It completely 180'd. After that Temple game, it was kind of the penultimate decision that it had to happen. And I'm liking what Daniel DePrato is doing. He's a great ambassador for the program in terms of, you know, saying, you know, it's a great day to be a Bull. Like, I mean, just some of the stuff that he says, not only for, you know, the football program, but just for the program in general, to get people hyped, like such a motivational type coach. And like, I really like to see stuff like that. So I'm excited, man. I would love to see him come back. I think he deserves to come back to this program in a bigger capacity than what he has. I don't think I don't expect him to fire Travis Trickett, because the offense didn't do horrible this year. Like, I mean, he's definitely deserving enough to get another year at least. And I don't think he'll be a defensive coordinator style coach, as I mentioned. So I would like to see him back. I just don't know where he would fit in terms of the shuffle. Maybe an offensive assistant, as you said. Maybe he could do something like that. That would be actually probably the best spot maybe for him. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up fitting in kind of the picture. And speaking of fitting into the picture, and speaking of a guy who he could be working with, Bong, we had talked about this a few weeks ago when Jeff Scott was fired, and we were talking about, you know, candidates of guys who could be, you know, possibly joining this program. And, you know, we talked about John Gruden, and John Gruden was a big favorite. I don't know if he still is or not. There's kind of that kind of has died down a little bit, but I know that that offer was on the table. But this offer is even bigger than John Gruden. We got to go to primetime, I feel like. Mr. Deion Primetime Sanders. If Deion comes to this program, now obviously these are just talks. He's been talking to them in Colorado. Those are the only two currently. Obviously, we've been hearing Lane Kiffin might go to Auburn, so it looks like the Auburn job might be taken up, but Ole Miss then will have a job, so we'll see. Maybe he might try to talk to Ole Miss and some of these other programs. But if Deion Sanders can land a job here at USF, and granted, Colorado's a Pac-12 team, but the Pac-12 is going to lose UCLA and USC. That Pac-12 is going to look a lot different in 2 years. It's going to be a completely different conference. USF's going to be in a great city, a little bit of an easier conference, but it's still going to be a pretty decent conference heading into next year. A lot of good schedule, and we'll talk about the schedule here in a little bit later as we get later on into the show. But Deion coming to USF, man, would be massive. I mean, you want to talk about explosive in terms of hirings. If Deion comes to USF, oh my gosh, shit's going to hit the fan. I'm telling you right now. It's going to be like a party down here in Tampa Bay, because that would be one of the biggest hires in Tampa sports. Like, It'll be up there with getting Tom Brady to come to the Bucs. Like, I'm not even joking. I'm being serious. Like, that would be a magnitude of getting Deion Sanders down here in Tampa. Because not only are you getting the name and you're getting the player, you're also getting the coach as well. You're getting his, you know, personality. You're getting so much with Deion that it would be a massive hire. And it would completely change the program just like that. John Gruden might take a little bit. Deion, just like that, you would completely 180 turn your program around.
What are your thoughts? I mean, that would be probably the biggest moment in program history since they were ranked in the top five back in 2007. And what an outstanding job he's done at Jackson State. You know, they're at 11-0 this year, and just the recruiting at an HBCU, at an FCS level, he's bringing 3 stars, 4 stars, even his son who was a 5-star.
He brought in like the top prospect in the NCAA.
Yeah, he's been incredible with the recruiting, and you think about the access and the facilities he has at Jackson State, and then how much better it would be at USF, and a guy who went to college in Florida at Florida State, you know, that would be an amazing opportunity and such an incredible name and like you're saying, absolutely explosive for this program. The recruiting that he would bring, the coaching, just the swagger that he would bring to the program would be absolutely unbelievable. So we have to see how it works. I know he did have a couple interests from some Power Five programs,
Colorado
but
actually sent him an offer.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if you have to choose between Colorado and USF's been bad, but Colorado has been pretty awful in these last couple of years as well. And I know Deion's more of a Southern guy, so it'd be really awesome to see him in USF. The only question is, can we lure him to USF? Obviously, if he was able to accept the offer, we'll take him right away. But can USF court him in the right way? And do the boosters have enough money to really give him a shot is the question. But would be just an unprecedented move in this program and something that would just be absolutely amazing. And once again, could some of those 4, 5, 3 stars maybe transfer to USF? And maybe, you know, like we were saying, we like some of the guys in the QB room, but Shedeur Sanders was a 5-star guy and a guy who even at a FCS level was thinking, well, should this guy be in the Heisman talks? is how incredible this guy's playing.
Yeah.
And it would just be absolutely huge. So, you know, would love John Gruden football wise, but Deion Sanders is just on a whole nother level, and the excitement would be, like you're saying, out of control.
Yeah, John Gruden on a football base would be big for the program still. I mean, don't get me wrong, John Gruden would be a great add to this program. I mean, you know, having a guy who's won a Super Bowl, I mean, you know, bringing in a guy like that would be huge. But if you could get Deion Sanders, like Hall of Fame NFL player, I mean, just the swagger, as you mentioned, you know, everybody knows who Deion is. You know, kids are going to want to play for Deion. Like, they're going to go to school to play for Deion. Like, you're going to have a lot of kids staying in the Tampa area, which is what you want. And obviously, now that UCF's going to the Big 12, or UCF, yeah, and now they're going to the Big 12, you really don't have to worry as much because they're going to be playing in a bigger conference. So you don't have to worry as much as, like, oh, I'm losing a player to go to UCF. I mean, it sucks because it's a rivalry, but it's also a completely different conference. They're going to be in the Power Five. We're going to be a group of five, at least for the moment. But if you get Deion, I mean, you never know what might happen. We could get to a Power Five. All this stuff about the new stadium, it could happen with Deion under helm. And you look at the future schedule, man, the next 3 to 4 years, our schedule is loaded with top 10, top 15 Power Five schools that we're going to be playing in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years. Here in this program, there's actually more interesting matchups for USF in the next like 10 years than there are for UCF in their future schedule. Like, if you look at their future schedule, it really isn't that impressive. USF is impressive. They have teams on there that I think would be awesome. Like, if they could get Deion, one of his first games next year as his coach against freaking Alabama. Like, that is awesome. Like, imagine Deion against Alabama. ESPN would like grab all over that game. Like, it would be a spectacle because it's Deion versus Bama. Like, that is like Nick Saban versus Deion. That is like the coolest coaching matchup in NCAA history. Like, there is so much that if Deion comes to this program, that would completely change. I mean, the uniforms, forget about what we have now. We're gonna get gold, like, on our uniforms, like legit, like gold plate, like numbers and such. It's gonna be that crazy. Like, I am so excited if Deion could come. I saw somebody kind of fakely posted that he accepted an offer. Doesn't exist, but I would have loved to have seen that. Would have been a great Thanksgiving gift for us. But we'll see, man. If Deion can come to this program, that would be incredible. It would be one of the best gets, not only in program history, in college football history, in my opinion. So,
yeah, man. So, I mean, it's hard to even say the words, the amount of excitement that would be around this program. It's just, can we lure him here? Can we get him? And even if we can't, you know, there's still a bunch of other prospects that would still be, you know, a Willie Simmons would still be a great hire. So there's still, even if we can't get Deion, you know, there's still a bunch of good candidates, but Deion would just be an absolute grand slam of a hire, man.
I mean, and he's in a great spot too, man. Like, he would gravitate so well to this area. Tampa, you know, again, as I mentioned heading into the show, I mean, he could go right up to Jacksonville, down to Miami to party. You know, I mean, it's such a Deion state. Like, Florida is such a state catered to the type of person that Deion is, especially Tampa, the way it's growing. I mean, he would fit perfectly in this area, fit perfectly with this team. I mean, again, there were the rate of people that would be going to this college would be going up through the roof just because Deion goes there. Like, you get to say that Deion's your head coach for your football team. That's awesome, man. So really interested to see what comes out of this. I didn't think at first when somebody said Deion, I'm like, oh, that is never going to happen. And then when I saw these rumors and Fox was posting about it, college football and stuff, talking about it for per sources that he was talking to USF in Colorado, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, if he comes to USF, man, oh, man, things are going to get serious here in Tampa Bay. I am so fired up about this. I'm getting giddy talking about it. But let's get about something that I also get excited about talking about, and that is the final, officially at this point right now, the final war on I-4 between UCF and USF. Gus Malzone, Daniel DePrado, UCF, and John Reese Plumlee, who will be playing baseball. So he's not done in his 1-on-I-4 battles. He's going to be playing baseball come the spring for UCF. So you'll get to see him on the baseball field, on the diamond, if you will, here coming in the spring versus Byron Brown, the rookie true freshman, and the boys from South Florida here on a Saturday night, ESPN2, so our second straight ESPN2 game. There's a lot to get into, man. I mean, the magnitude of this game is huge. There's a lot of implications. If UCF loses this game, and I believe, if UCF loses this game, they're out of the conference championship. If they win, they are in. So winning, they're in. If they lose, they're out. So as you mentioned, Vaughn, at the beginning of the show, USF could be playing for two trophies. We would love to have that Warren I-4 trophy. Love to have that sign. It's one of the better trophies, by the way, in my opinion. And then, obviously, we would love to take out UCF out of the conference championship next week. Obviously, they're not going to be hosting. They haven't been able to really keep their own the last couple of weeks. They lost to Navy, lost to ECU. I mean, UCF's kind of an interesting team here. They've been losing the teams they shouldn't have lost to, if you will. They've been losing the teams that haven't been very good. So it's going to be interesting to see here what goes on here on Saturday. Vaughn, I'm going to begin with you. You know, I mean, I think this is the biggest game in program history, in my opinion.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's huge for momentum going into the offseason as well. Biggest game in program history. That might be pushing a little bit, but it is an absolutely huge game. Just for the confidence and how this team is going forward and trying to keep some of those guys that are maybe thinking about transferring out to be able to play the upset and take away that that chance for UCF in that championship game would be absolutely huge. And to be able to have a celebration in Ray J for this team who hasn't really been able to celebrate a win except for Howard earlier this season. So would be absolutely huge, but did drop that weird game against Navy last week, you know, triple option. Sometimes teams just really can't defend it. They did beat that tough Tulane team the week before. So they are a tested team. They're very solid. John Reese Plumlee is obviously the main guy we're going to talk about, leads the team in passing and in rushing, but he can be flustered in the air. Hasn't always been the most consistent passer. And if USF can create a little havoc through the air, maybe they'll have a shot. But the issue is, once Malzahn sees that Plumlee's struggling through the air, he goes to a lot of his running, which Plumlee, obviously an amazing athlete, and if you could play baseball as well, shows that you're quite the stud. And he can really create space with his legs as well through the running game. So he's going to be one of the scarier QBs that USF has faced all year. Also has some solid receivers. Javon Baker, who's the Bama transfer, and Ryan O'Keefe are their two leading guys. And Malzahn as well is always tough to play against. He always has some creative motions and creative plays that really catch the defense off guard. So as I said earlier, it's really going to be, how does this defense show up against this really tough UCF offense?
Can I just say one thing real quick? John Rhys Plumlee is literally the leading rusher on UCF, not Isaiah Bowser. Not even Isaiah Bowser is actually third, surprisingly. I thought he would have been more, but he does have 13 touchdowns. It's impressive. John Rhys Plumlee, though, is a leading rusher in terms of yards, and he's even got 9 touchdowns as well. The kid's been very good this year for this team. But as you mentioned, Vaughn, you made a very good point. When he is flustered, seems like, you know, as you mentioned, he relies on some other guys, and Gus Malzahn will go to different players and such. And he's also gone to a different quarterback as well. That's another thing interesting as well going into this game is Mikey Keene, another quarterback coming into this game for the UCF Knights. He's a guy who's actually had some playing time for this Knights team, especially when Rhys Plumlee hasn't played maybe his hottest ball. So it's going to be interesting to see. The Bulls really got to be prepared possibly for the possibility of two quarterbacks as well heading into this weekend. Obviously, the Bulls, I mean, unless Brown gets injured, which God forbid Brown gets injured, please. Like, we do not need another injured quarterback heading into the offseason here this year. But granted, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Mikey Keene is an interesting quarterback for this Knights team as well. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, kind of if Plumlee doesn't have maybe the best of games this weekend and maybe the defense steps up finally. You know, Mikey Keene could be a guy who could see some playing time this weekend as well. You just never know. Again, this rivalry game, as I mentioned heading into the year, this rivalry game is literally the most unpredictable game for the Bulls because, honestly, this team could win this game just because of the rivalry itself. So, again, there's a lot at stake for this game for both teams.
Yeah, and Mikey Keene, a little bit more of a pocket passer guy, had a pretty solid year last year with 1,700 yards and 17 touchdowns to go with only 6 picks. So can really throw the ball through the air. Isn't as much of a running threat as John Rhys Plumlee is. But as you were saying, rivalry games always something a little different, man. No matter how bad USF's been this year, that can always change. And with all that's at stake with the two trophies and the confidence of this team going forward, if USF pulls off this win, is a guy like Deion a little bit more engaged and ready to come on over? There's, like you're saying, so much that could be going on with this game, and Byron Brown as well. Let's see what he can do again this week. But as I was saying before, the defense just really needs to do a very solid job. I mean, UCF's defense has been solid as well this year, allowing under 20 points per game, but has been susceptible at times, like you were saying.
Yep.
In the East Carolina game, did struggle and has given up big points here and there over the season. So USF's really going to have to play one of their best games of the year to have a shot against a UCF team who, while inconsistent at times, still overall in the season has been very solid and a team that deserves to possibly play in that championship game. But very excited, and once again, rivalry game, man. Anything can happen. You know, the boys, last time for the seniors playing, you know, how does that change, and how does DiPrato get the men ready to go to war, the war on I-4, and really just give it all and give it all, because it's the last time a lot of these guys will be playing together and the last time this iteration of 2022 USF football is going to be able to show what they can do on the field.
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention too with this rivalry, by the way, it's been very streaky in terms of teams winning this rivalry. So the first 4 years were dominated by the Bulls, and obviously during those years, the Bulls were really the team at that point in the Big East. I mean, the Big East was on a different level. That was almost a Power 5 conference in a sense during that Big East era when they had West Virginia, Syracuse, Louisville, everybody was in there. A lot of teams that you know nowadays in, you know, Power 5 conferences were in that conference. So that was a lot of big, you know, it was a big conference at that point during those years. And then 2013-2014 rolled around and the conference or the rivalry renewed. UCF went over to the American. They grabbed those two wins. Now remember, those were the Blake Bortles years. Those were they were very good UCF teams. And then you go to the 2015-2016. Those were the last two Bulls War on I-4 wins. Those were the, you know, those turnaround years for UCF, the, you know, Quentin Flower era years. Those were like very good for the Bulls. And then obviously these last 5 years have been dominated by the UCF Knights, obviously with some of those games obviously coming in their historical run that they've had early in the 2017, 18, 19 years where they're making it, you know, Power 5 big, you know, New Year's Six games every year.
Claiming so, BS national championships and whatnot.
Yeah, we're not talking. Listen, UCF fans, they need to take that sign off. First off, you guys never had a shot to get to the championship that year. Second off, we actually were ranked number two. You guys were never ranked number two. So take that, UCF. How about that? I'm sorry. Again, I get very passionate about this rivalry here. But no, nonetheless, man, it's been dominated by the UCF Knights the last five seasons. But really, the last 2 years, though, the Bulls have hung around, man. Like, last year was obviously some crazy shenanigans happened at the end with the referee and all that good jazz and the 10-second runoff and the challenge, and that was a mess. And then, obviously, in 2020, that was a COVID year, Bulls put up, like, the most yards in that game on that season. It was, like, ridiculous. I was like, how are they doing this? I had not seen that all year from that team that year. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's going to be – I don't know if this could be as high scoring as Tulsa. I think it's going to be a little bit less scoring, but I do think this is going to be a pretty epic game. Like, I think it'd be a lot of back and forth. I think we're going to see a good battle, if you will, between these two schools as we head into this game. So I guess let's talk about our players to watch here heading into this game here on Saturday, Vaughn. We'll begin offensively for both teams. So let's begin with USF. Who do you have as your offensive player for USF? And then I'll go to me, and then we'll do UCF next.
Well, pretty easy choice for me. I mean, I think we're just all so excited to see what Byron Brown can do again this week. And once again, such a solid week and so comfortable. And UCF is going to have to watch that film and be a little scared, man. Yeah. You know, I lost the game, obviously, Friday night, and that's very tough. But this kid can really throw the ball around the yard, and UCF's going to have to be scared. And how do they adjust their game plan to what Brown can do? And can Brown bring it again and have that consistency that he did last week again this week? And if he does bring it once again and have that type of completion percentage game, USF has a real shot to pull this one out.
Yeah, Brian Batty obviously would probably be the, in terms of the statistical guy, probably would say would be the player to watch, but I'm going to go Byron Brown as well. I mean, just coming off that game, how does he respond heading into this game? First war on I-4 and possibly his only ever war on I-4 he might play, because – again, we'll talk about in a little bit what the schedule is going to look like for both of these teams and where this game could fit in later on, because I do hope that they bring this game back. I do think it deserves to be, played, I would say, constantly. You know, hopefully it's a yearly rivalry that these two teams kind of renew, if you will, down the line. But, I got to go Byron Brown, man. I mean, how does he respond? Again, how does he respond from last week? Can he put together a similar performance like last week? If he can play anywhere close to what he did last week, we're in for a special game on Saturday night, man. Byron Brown is, if he could play the way he did and really come with confidence and such, obviously it's his first home game. First start home game. So interested to see kind of if he's got any butterflies, any nerves, if you will. Obviously we saw him play a little bit towards the tail end of the home game against SMU 2 weeks ago, and obviously played a little bit against Temple. So, he's got some experience here playing in Ray J. I'm interested. He looked good against SMU in the late stages. Obviously, that was garbage time, but he looked good. I'm excited to see what he could do out of the gate, and hopefully he can get this team started on a good note. And I've been so impressed, too, by the way, with this team really getting started good out of the gate, especially in these last couple of weeks, man. And ever since, like, kind of the conference play started, it feels like the team has kind of turned things around in terms of getting started early out of the gate. And we've seen it improve each time as they've gotten better and better at it. And last week it looked really good. The team looked good in that first quarter. So I'm excited to see what Byron Brown can do, man. Let's hope for a nice game for Byron Brown here on Saturday night. I think he will put together a nice game as well.
Yeah, man. Super excited for him. And once again, just looked so comfortable, which is so weird to see from a rookie, but just an absolutely amazing. And he's going to need to play great to give us a shot. But as far as my UCF player to watch, I mean, it's going to be, how does Plumlee play, man? Like, if he can be consistent enough through the air to where this offense really gets moving, then it's going to be really tough for a USF defense that's really struggled all year to stop him. If he can run the ball well and pass the ball well, it's so tough to stop in such an amazing offense. And he's been really exciting all year. Once again, has not been the most consistent passer, and that's the spot where USF can really try to attack him. But he has been one of the most dynamic QBs in college football this year, and that really shows in the stats with him leading in passing and rushing. So USF's going to need to slow him down as much as they can if they want to have a shot to win this one on Saturday night.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go Plumlee as well. Pretty easy pick here. Again, what can Plumlee do this weekend? Can he you know, play a good full game of football? Can he stay clean? You know, I mean, we obviously know the type of athlete he is and what he can do on the ground. And, you know, if they have to, they'll probably end up running him if they have to. But can he limit the mistakes is going to be the big key here heading into Saturday night. Let's go defensively here real quick. We'll go USF, UCF. For USF, I'm going to begin off with mine. Dwayne Boyles, man, has to be the player to watch. I mean, that's easy. And honestly, I think UCF is going to be easy as well, looking at their stat sheet and looking at the guys who have really been the big key contributors. But yeah, I'm going to go Dwayne Boyles. He's a senior. It's his final year with the program. He's going to want to ball out. He knows how important this game is. He's been here before. He's done that. He hasn't won at all since his time with this program. He wants to probably get a win bad. He's going to try to get that defense. Actually, this may be a great game for Dwayne Boyles to get that defense going. This may be, you know, really show his leadership, if you will, in this game. And I would love to see him get that defense going, because I really think that Dwayne Boyles, you know, would want to get – he wants to get this win. I know that. So I'm looking forward to see what he could do on the gridiron on Saturday night against UCF in his final war on I-4.
Yeah, man, and he's a stud. And as we were talking about, guys like Byron Brown might not really know this rivalry, but Dwayne Boyles is a guy who knows this rivalry in and out. And even though he's been on the losing end each and every single time, unfortunately, he knows how much hatred there is in this rivalry and how much energy he's really got to bring for this team to have a shot. But I actually went with Jaden Curry, who's an upcoming DB and was second in tackles last game. And he's starting to look like a serious piece, and only a sophomore. Could be a guy who is a dude for them going forward into the future. Needs to improve in coverage a little bit. Has a couple times where he got beat and burnt, but that's all an experience, and that's understandable from a DB room who has really struggled all year, but is showing a lot of promise in the run game, coming down and making tackles. Had 6 tackles last week and 5 tackles the week before, so really starting to come down and make plays. And if he can improve in coverage, he could be a real stud for this defense.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with that. I like the pick there. And we'll go now to UCF. Similar situation in terms of the tackle leaders. Got kind of your big guy there in terms of Jason Johnson kind of being that leader in terms of the defense. And then you got kind of everybody else in terms of the tackling stats there. I'm actually going to go with Jason Johnson for that reason. You know, I want to see kind of the battle Boyles versus Johnson, the two tackling leaders, you know, kind of the two, you know, kind of concrete, you know, the pillars, if you will, of the defense. And, you know, really holding up what is kind of a lopsided defense, if you will, in terms of, you know, the production, where the production has came from, as really Johnson and Boyles have really been kind of the two boss hogs, if you will, in terms of, you know, giving the team the most production out of them. So I want to see what Johnson does. There is one other player that I was looking at, Brash, as well. 6 sacks on the year. He's had a good year up front. Would be excited to see what he could do against what's been kind of a interesting offensive line. They've kind of actually played very well the last couple of weeks offensively. I'm excited to see what happens. You got Brad Cecil, who's in one of his final years. I believe this is his final year, so he's going to be graduating next year. So, again, another guy who knows what it's like to be on the losing end of this UCF rivalry. He knows what the rivalry is about, too. So, very much looking forward to see what that offensive line can do for the Bulls. But yeah, I'm going to go with Jason Johnson. Who do you have for your guy?
That's who I had as well, man. I mean, I think that's really the only pick you can go with. More than double the tackles of any other guy on that UCF team. The 6'2", 224 linebacker, Eastern Illinois transfer, just flies all over the field, is an absolute playmaker for them, and a guy who really, you know, a lot of times on defense, the coaches will tell you to stay in your lane and make sure that you're filling your part of the field and your gap. But they kind of use him all over the field and allow him to be really a heat-seeking missile who can go after the ball, see ball, get ball, and he's been pretty amazing at it this year. And Definitely. And a guy who's a senior and a transfer, so doesn't know the rivalry as much, but knows that he wants to take care of business against this USF team.
Definitely, for sure, man. Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do here heading into Saturday night. Let's finish here with our final predictions, and then we'll get into the schedule super quick. But let's get into the final predictions here. USF UCF final war on I-4. Who's going to bring home that? What is it? The like traffic sign, whatever it is, the I-4 sign. Who's going to bring it home, man? Who's going to bring home that war on I-4 trophy here heading into Saturday?
Man, this whole year I've tried to be, you know, really non-biased and try to give my score as close to what I think the game's really going to be, but I'm really just going to hope for havoc here and hope that USF can cause some turnovers, that Plumlee really struggles. And I'm going to go USF 30, UCF 28 in the upset. DePrato brings the juice. You know, Batie maybe rushes for 150 yards and has a great game, and hopefully Brown can replicate what he did last week. And I'm going to really hope for some havoc, even though UCF obviously on a whole different level from this USF team. But rivalry games, man, you never know what's going to happen.
I'm going to make two predictions. I'm going to make my biased pick and my non-biased. I'm going to go USF 35-31 to win. I would like to see him win. I think if Byron Brown can actually, you know, play a very similar game that he did last week, and the defense can kind of hold UCF a little bit, because I do think if they can cause UCF to make mistakes, that's going to be their big thing. They need to tighten up up front. They need to get more aggressive up front, get to the quarterback. I haven't seen much of that this season outside of maybe like Jason Vaughn. So I'm going to go 35-31 USF if we win. If we lose, I'm going to go UCF 38. I'm going to go USF 28. I think they'll pull away late.
Way to cover yourself on both sides. Very nice.
But personally, in my opinion, I think UCF probably will end up winning this game, but I would like to see USF win it. It's tough to describe it, but that's where I'm going to leave it off at right there. Before we let everybody go, though, I want to look at the schedule real quick coming up here for both teams, because I want to look to see where this game could be played in the upcoming future, because that's kind of be the interesting thing here heading forward for both of these teams. Let me get to the actual
absolutely
schedule.
And while you're looking that up, also Dylan and I will both be at the game covering the game, so make sure you're checking out flteams.com for the content that we're going to be putting out. You know, super excited, both of us. We should have stuff up that night, recapping the game, recapping the season, and just giving our general thoughts on everything this year. So make sure you guys stay tuned with that.
We should definitely do a video where at the stadium before we head out. We'll talk about the game and kind of get our reaction of it. I believe there's also gonna be another person from FL Teams is going to be there as well, if I'm not mistaken. I saw on Instagram, one of our other contributors as well for FL Teams will be there. So it's going to be a full house, man. We're going to have Alex there. We're going to have you, me. It's going to be like a full FL Teams takeover there at USF here coming in Saturday. I got a friend going to the game as well. So it's going to be a very fun night of football there for the Bulls and for the Knights fan bases there. But let's take a look at the conference schedule. So for USF, as of right now, this is what their conference schedule looks like, man. I mean, 2023 is pretty much filled. 24 isn't filled, but it's basically filled. I mean, Louisville at Alabama, NC State. If you put UCF in there, dang, that's going to be a tough, tough non-conference slam. I mean, that's all Power 5 schools that year. 2025, Boise State, Florida at Miami, San Jose State. That's what I'm saying, man. Like, oh, sorry about that. If you're Deion Sanders, man, 2023, 2024, 2025, I mean, just look at that schedule, man. I mean, it is all powerful schools. I mean, you even look at 2025. I mean, Boise State's a good program. They've been consistently good at football the last couple of years. At Florida, at Miami, I mean, San Jose State is kind of the outlier there. But, I mean, you look at the next 3 years, man. I mean, whoever ends up coming into this program is going to have some massive games. I mean, even in 2023, UConn's become a team that's kind of on the rise. Western Kentucky's a team that we've played in the past, and they've been consistently good, it feels like, at football the last couple of years. So some great matchups for the USF. And then we take a look here at UCF here. Again, a lot more openings here as we get through the season. So let's go back to UCF or USF schedule here real quick. Right now, as I speak, 2024 looks like the only open date for the UCF Knights and USF Bulls to play, but it would only be 1 year. They would only play that year, and then they would have to wait until it looks like 2028. So 2028 right now, man, it looks like will be the next time we could see this rivalry renew. Would you like to see this rivalry renew? Because I think it should renew. I think this is the biggest rivalry in the state, or one of the bigger rivalries in the state. It's probably second to maybe, or third, I would say, even maybe to like Florida and FSU and like Miami and FSU or Miami, Florida. What's your opinion, man? 2028, do you think that's probably a good spot to put it, just based off of looking at the schedule right now?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think this is definitely the most unfortunate part about UCF leaving the conference. I think that the war on I-4 should absolutely be the exact same way that Florida State and Florida play. At the end of every single year, it should be the war on I-4, just as it has been in the last a couple years. I mean, it's one of the, as you said, you know, Miami and Florida State's one of the greatest rivalries in college football, and Florida and Florida State is another one that's one of the greatest rivalries in college football, and those are Power Five programs, so that's a little different. Mm-hmm. But as far as group of five rivalries go, this is one of the biggest and one of the most well known and such fun games that we've had. You know, obviously it's been tough as a USF fan in the last couple of years, but still just absolutely fun games. Both teams, you know, bring the energy. Both teams really don't like each other. Fan bases don't really like each other. USF Hate Week is always a big thing on Twitter for UCF fans, and UCF Hate Week is always a big thing on social media for USF fans. So hopefully, you know, 2028 is still quite a while away, but hopefully we can get it to where it's like that Florida and Florida State, or it's like that Oklahoma and a Texas, where every single year these teams really should be meeting. And even if UCF is in a little bit of a different spot, you know, these teams have been rival for such a long time, and I feel it really should continue.
Yeah, and there's going to be so much that could change by then. You never know. USF could be possibly coming to the Big 12, and that might all change. I mean, you just never know. Obviously, that's wishful thinking at this point, but you just kind of never know what the program is going to be at in the next couple of years. And there's other things, too, that could go along with it as well. I mean, you look at, you know, like it's definitely going to be interesting to see where this, you know, rivalry ends up getting renewed. I mean, this is, again, a great rivalry. It would be beneficial for you, USF, to have it, because you would get a, you know, guaranteed at least Big 12 opponent every year, which is, you know, something that if you look at USF schedule, like there is a lot of Power Five schools who would love to come down to Tampa. You see Miami, you see Bama, Louisville, NC State. I mean, 2024, just only three teams. I mean, compared to some of the other years, 2024 is Louisville at Alabama, NC State. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's like a crazy non-conference schedule that year. So there's a lot of interesting stuff happening. Yeah, I would say 2028 probably be the best year. I mean, they could bring it back 2024 as like a one-off type thing, but I think 2028 would be the best year, because I feel like 2024, you might want to put in like a game like Bethune-Cookman that year, because that is a freaking tough schedule. I mean, that is going to be really tough. I mean, I don't expect them to win any of those games, depending on where the programs will be at, but they shouldn't beat Bama. NC State's probably will still be pretty good then. Louisville, I have no idea where they'll be at that point as a program. So, yeah, I'll say 2028, man. I would love to see this rivalry back. This has to come back, man. I mean, I just think it's guaranteed it has to come back, because, again, it's such a great rivalry, and it's one of the few group of fives that actually incorporate a trophy into it too, which is awesome. That just shows you how important this rivalry is. When you actually have a trophy you could play for, it shows the importance of this rivalry and what it's how important it is to these fan bases.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And at this point, obviously, USF needs the UCF game a little more than UCF needs the USF game. Yeah. But any way you put it, I mean, it's always an awesome game and super exciting. And especially, you know, when you're looking forward to the day after Thanksgiving, Friday night game, and always just been a great time watching those two teams face off. And hopefully it can return. I mean, 2024 would be fun as a one-off, but it really needs to return as a consistent fixture in both of these teams' schedule every year.
Maybe they could play at Camping World as like a special one-off. Actually, that would be kind of cool, actually.
That would be very cool.
I know it probably wouldn't be good because it would be basically a USF pro, USF or UCF proud, but
yeah,
that would be awesome. Like to be able to have something similar to like Oklahoma and Texas, where it's like they play in like a giant stadium. They have that center logo, the World Eye 4 logo in the center.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Would be really, really cool. I would actually love to see that. So we'll see, man. But yeah, it should be interesting. Final home game on the season, final game of the year. Next week, we will be back to recap this season. We'll do like MVPs and have some little awards and stuff for all of our, you know, kind of players who we thought had the best seasons, which isn't really too hard for some of these guys, but it's going to be interesting at some of these positions. So we'll see what ends up happening there next week. We're going to have a bowl prediction show. Like we're going to go through every single bowl game on the schedule. By the way, I'll be at the ReliaQuest Bowl and the, I guess, Real Bowl. We haven't put them in yet, but I'll try to be trying to make it out for those and get you guys covered for that. So that'll be fun. So we still got more college football on the way, just kind of in a more abbreviated and like one day situation than it is weekly. But Vaughn, it's been a fun ride, man. We've done all the conference games. Next year, hoping to do all the games on the schedule. Obviously, next year will be nuts with Alabama and Western Kentucky and Florida A&M and all those non-conference teams, and obviously with it being a new conference, gonna have new teams gonna be coming in. We'll get to learn about these teams as well, as is most of the people probably in the fan base as well. Getting a chance to learn about these teams. So a lot of exciting stuff happening with the program heading into next year. New head coach, could it be Deion, man? Will Deion be the guy to turn things around? I mean, again, it would be massive if Deion could come to this program, especially looking at the non-conference schedule, man. Deion would get some fun of matchups here coming up here in the next couple of years. So really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with this program. But for myself, for Von Sikora, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hopefully everyone had a great holiday. We appreciate you listening to us and spending some time with us here on this holiday weekend. Saturday night, man, UCF and the War on I-4. Let's rock and roll, baby. Let's light the I-4 interstate on fire this weekend, because that's what it's going to be like. No driving, no traveling this weekend on the I-4 interstate, because it is going to be a hot, hot rivalry here between these two schools. I cannot wait. So let's rock and roll. But ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend. We'll see you guys Saturday night for UCF and USF. Peace out, guys.